What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, FightfulSelect.com. It's a backstage report. Now, admittedly, the last couple of weeks have been a bit different format. Usually I put out these before the interviews drop, but the time-sensitive nature of the Deonna Purrazzo and Mike Kanellis-Bennett interviews have had me switching the schedule up a little bit in that regard, but there's a lot of stuff that isn't coming out in the stories and the articles that I also talk to these people about. So they'll still be focal points of the Backstage Report podcast that is still exclusive content to Fightful.com. But we'll save those towards the end of this segment because we've got plenty of WWE news, plenty of indie news, AEW stuff, all that. So the AEW thing, admittedly, I, like many people, thought when they said they were going live, and not even they, it was reported, and then I later confirmed it with AEW, that they said they were going live, I thought they meant weekly, and I'm so glad that they didn't mean weekly. I'm told that the upcoming Dynamite, the first Dynamite of May, will be live, as well as Double or Nothing. They're going to do some staggered tapings and some taped shows in there as well. If they got to do it, then I don't blame them doing it this way. And from what I understand, their TV deal is dependent on this. They've got to make money, and that's the way that they're going to make money is from this TV deal. But I think it should be made clear, AEW didn't try to force the issue as it pertains to Essential Media. They weren't trying to get around the ruling or anything like that. But when it was deemed that wrestling was essential media, well, then they made some changes, and they got back at Daily's place, which wasn't an option prior because they had been doing testing and all that. But I know that when they were in Georgia, they sent some of the older talent home. They worked with about 30% of their roster. I'm told that they'll be working with, I think, something like double the amount of wrestlers that they had for that last set of tapings now. But even other major sports teams in the region didn't know that this was going to come down, this ruling, this executive order was going to come down. I heard from a lot of AEW talent this week who put over Tony Khan's leadership specifically through these times, and without providing specifics, I'm told that he's went above to make sure that everyone is taken care of and doing well, including some of the per-show employees. There was a lot of concern from those that we spoke to on the AEW roster about the loss of work within WWE. And there were also some who were curious about how high on the totem pole the cuts would go. But cuts went all the way up from what I understand, which is very unfortunate. Also unfortunate, I'm told that X-Pac's podcast has quietly ended for the time being. He's opted to take a bit of a break from Twitter. Sean Waltman, one of the good dudes in pro wrestling. So, and I think is just a fountain of wrestling knowledge and information, especially as it pertains to psychology and even the psychology of the psychology, if that makes any sense. Like, he's got an outstanding outlook on things. When he says stuff, you look at things and you go, man, he simplifies it in such a way that a lot of people don't. And he's a real talent. I hope we get to see him talk more wrestling sometime soon. Well, we talked wrestling with AJ Gray. He was an interesting interview. Former GCW champion ended Nick Gage's long reign, and he struck me, technically, because I tried to get him to bury people on social media. He wouldn't bury RJ City, which is somewhat surprising, but he said that it was a little surreal for him to win that title from Nick Gage, considering the reign of Gage, and he got brought back into GCW after getting booked from a Facebook message. He doesn't necessarily have a goal promotion that he's aiming for at the moment, but just wants to provide for his family and make more money doing what he loves. Gray saw his profile rise significantly in 2019, especially as it pertains to venues, promotions, and the level of opponents that he faced. And he thinks that Southern Wrestling should adapt the same mentality that a lot of Midwest promotions have adapted, or adopted, rather. And he thinks that some of the Southern promotions rely on the past, booking shows like their 2000 instead of 2020, and thinks that they could really take a bit of inspiration from the way that the Midwest has boomed and moved towards the future. He singled out Anthony Henry and James Drake as great talents to emerge from the South regardless, and you see them doing stuff with Evolve and all across the independent world. So there are some bright spots, and AJ Gray is one of those guys. I always point to AJ Gray, Danhausen, and Warhorse, as well as Eric Stevens, as three guys who really took off when AEW pulled a lot of the talent pool from the indies. Those three or four guys really stood up and did a lot of great stuff, and I think have really been a great beneficiary. Killer Cross is now Karrion Kross, and I know a lot of people instantly overreacted to the name and said, ah, this sucks, and hey, we're a part of that too. We do instant reactions, and we do react to things live, and I like to see how those takes sort of last over the course of time, whether it be days, weeks, months, or even years. But I'm told that the Karrion Kross name was actually Cross's idea as opposed to WWE, and that they were open to the possibility of him being Killer Kross when they first had conversations. Now, you got to remember, WWE has had Killer Khan, Killer Kelly, the Killer Bees. Like, obviously, Killer Bees is a little bit of a different scenario. And I also learned about some of the inspiration of it. I'm told that Karrion is the decaying flesh of dead animals. So, FYI, there you go. There are also ties to Latin and Greek mythology and Charon in the name. Charon was the ferryman of Hades who carried the souls of the newly deceased across the rivers of Styx and Acheron. And Kross has a tattoo of Charon on his back. So, thank you to those who I spoke to that kind of gave me the rundown on some of the Greek mythology associated there, and Latin mythology, I understand. So, if you're upset over Killer Kross's name, pin it on him. Pin it on the man himself, I'm told. All jokes aside, he's one of the good dudes. I hope he does well in WWE. Killer Kross, I mean, I guess there is a limit to where that name can take you. Maybe. I don't know. To me, it's just a name. I don't think that anybody's going to confuse him for an actual murderer. So, other WWE notes, based on talent that we've heard from, almost no talent have been wearing masks around the WWE tapings, but about 80% of the staff has been. And I've been told that they do medical screening before they go in. And based on the people that I talk to, they are not being forced to work. Like, that's a thing. There's a lot of, and WWE caught some flack from that anonymous call, so to speak, and they said that we're not making people work. That's what I've heard. I've heard they're not making people work. It's just some people are like, man, there have been a lot of cuts. What if I go in there and I tell them I don't want to work? Is my job safe in this type of situation? So, but based on what I've heard, nobody's been fired for that or that have raised those concerns, so to speak. So, Maybe that's how you do it. Sarah Logan was still in Orlando as of last week, as she and Eric of the Viking Raiders have stuck around while he has to still film content for Raw. Now, there was a completely incorrect report that said that I reported that she was there waiting for WWE to use her. That is not, I've not heard that's the case. Now, she was mentioned a lot on Raw, and maybe she was. Maybe that is the case, but I didn't report that. I just reported that they stayed in Orlando. There's a lot of people that are staying in Orlando with other wrestlers right now while the tapings go on because they didn't feel like leaving. And they're afraid they won't be able to make it back if they do leave. To follow up on some of those releases, the NXT no-compete dates aren't as solid as originally told to the talent. Some were given rough non-competes, like slightly beyond the 30 days. But it's differed for a lot of the people that have inquired. Also, not that it's any surprise, but the Triple H 25th anniversary segment went way over the planned time for it on the show that night. But fortunately, it was pre-taped. I from what I had heard, they budgeted it for about 10 minutes, but it ended up going closer to 19 or 20 as they filmed it. But it's Vince McMahon, it's Triple H, it's Shawn Michaels, they can really do whatever it is they want. Some more on the Velveteen Dream thing. So I'm going to walk you through the story here. Researching the accusations that were levied against him, we came across some additional information that was actually presented to us. Now, Fightful was sent an affidavit for an arrest warrant for Velveteen Dream after an alleged incident in November 2019, and the arrest warrant was issued in December 2019. A man named Edgar Rodriguez was reported a criminal mischief to Orlando PD on November 30th, saying that he parked his 2015 Infiniti, and when he returned to the vehicle, he found his driver's side window smashed. The incident was caught on surveillance footage by the building, and it featured a black man in a pink shirt and dark pants approaching the vehicle and then smashing the window and getting in a blue Ford Mustang. About 2.5 weeks later, Edgar Rodriguez says that he saw the man, who he later identified as Patrick Clark, a.k.a. Velveteen Dream, from a police lineup, and the Mustang's license plate showed that it was registered to Velveteen Dream. The damage was stated to be equal to $1,800, according to the warrant affidavit, and a warrant was issued for the arrest of Velveteen Dream, with bail set at $1,000. However, on February 11th, the warrant for the arrest was recalled, though no further details were given. It was listed as not suitable for prosecution. Now, that could mean a whole lot of things. It could mean that they didn't find cause after all this to arrest him. It could mean that Edgar Rodriguez didn't want to pursue this any longer. It could mean that they had kind of settled things outside of the legal system. It could have meant a lot of things. But I had a lot of people who really, I don't think, understand the line of work that we're in that said, oh, you just put it out after all these accusations. You're trying to take him down. Why'd you put this out now when it happened then? Well, the reason we put it out then was because I didn't know about it before. Nobody knew about it before. It had never been published before. Through the situation that Velveteen Dream is going through right now, I was presented with this arrest affidavit. I called up the Orange County clerk. I called up Orlando PD and was able to confirm this as being an accurate document. It is public information. It's not private information. You can go to the Orange County clerk website and look it up yourself. It's got what I believe is his picture from the police lineup attached to the arrest warrant. It's not an attempted takedown of Patrick Clark or Velveteen Dream. I've never spoken to the man. I don't know the man. I don't have anything against him. We report the news, and that's that. There was no editorializing of it. There was no additional information that was provided. I reached out to WWE. They did not respond to our comment. And, I mean, I hate to tell you guys, if you all don't want negative stories about wrestlers that you like, or you don't want positive stories about wrestlers you dislike, or the vice versa, this ain't the website for you, man. We're going to report the news. If we happen to get it a few months after it happened, it's still going to get published. I would like to be on top of it, but nobody came to me and said, hey, did you hear that Velveteen Dream allegedly bashed in a window when it happened? Edgar Rodriguez didn't hit me up and make this accusation to me. It was another person that actually lives in Orlando that sent me this information, and I pursued it and ended up finding out what we found out. Now, there's a whole other set of issues. They are not connected to this that he's going through. To my knowledge, there is no connection there. So if you're drawing a connection there, or you're trying to imply that we drew a connection there just because we said, also, we stumbled upon this, you're just being obtuse at that point. But hope things get better, because that sounds like a mess. Also a mess with the Revival, Caleb Conley and Zane Riley. I'm told those two sides have been in contact, as Caleb Conley and Zane Riley have not taken kindly to the Revival registering Fear the Revolt, but I'm told that's not even their team name. So we'll see how that goes. WWE has been very lenient with talent scheduling their own interviews and doing them, but a lot of them that I've contacted have said, hey, we got to go through WWE. So I just want you guys to know, I have reached out to several WWE talent during this period too, and I'm hoping to get some interviews with them as well to kind of give you all some more to look into. Mike Bennett told me that WWE didn't have a problem or even contact him about him doing his seminars towards the end of his WWE run because he was doing them for free, so he doesn't think that it even got on their radar, so to speak. But going through the company, obviously, is the preferred method. But from what I understand, they've been pretty lenient with that of late. Bennett confirmed WWE was well aware of he and Maria's plans to have another child when they re-signed last year, and said they even broke the news to Paul Heyman first when he came to them with a creative idea. Heyman pivoted into what we saw on TV instead, and even asked their permission to tell Vince McMahon. But originally, Mike and Maria hoped that she could help out in creative, and Mike even credited her with the idea for them to have the Love Ballad theme song that they both loved, but or that brought it up because of an idea that Billy Corgan threw out there when they were in Impact Wrestling. So it's clear that Billy Corgan, his musical taste and influence extends to pro wrestling as well. Bennett and Maria's first pitch was very similar to what we saw unfold, in that she would be very controlling of him. But the way that they pitched it is that he would snap a little bit, and that he was a pushover until she pushed him, and that pushed him over the edge. I had somebody say, isn't that what Rusev did? And I'm like, not really. Not really. Lana was more of a director instead of a motivator. Had somebody compare it to Festus, and I'm like, no, he's not comatose or anything. It's just he'll do anything to impress her and make her happy, so to speak. That monster Deonna Purrazzo interview dropped. Not to toot my own horn, but the Deonna Purrazzo and Mike Bennett interviews are two of my favorite I've ever done. I really, really love doing these Skype video interviews and getting some good time with these people. And to be quite honest with you guys, when I'm able to schedule these interviews outside the auspices of another company, I don't have to promote whatever project that the company has coming up or anything like that. It gives you a little more creative freedom. Now, obviously, I'm going to promote Mike Bennett's stuff and Deonna Purrazzo's stuff. They just lost their jobs. They're still getting paid, but they got stuff coming up, and I hope you guys support that. But Deonna wasn't that sure that anybody supported her in NXT but herself. She thinks that the environment in NXT was, be grateful for what you've got in this situation. But she wasn't of that mindset because she felt like she already worked hard enough to get to NXT. She had been on ROH. She had been on NXT and SmackDown. She had been in TNA on Impact. And she got booked for All In. But she expressed her frustration in March of this year and asked WWE to let her go if they didn't have creative plans for her, and even let them know that. She believes a conversation about her not putting someone over may have led to her release, because she never heard from the company after that until she was fired. But she had actually drafted an email in December asking for her release, but didn't send it out because she got the call to face Asuka on Raw and thought it might actually lead to something. They were not given any additional information. They were not provided any real update because it was over the Christmas break right after that. So she was left in the dark. Deonna and Chelsea had pitched their team and appeared on TV together, and got a text the day that they had appeared on NXT on USA in the crowd saying they'd be on the show. Triple H had asked them to come up with vignette and character and name ideas, and they sent ideas multiple times, did shoots together, both collectively and Chelsea as a solo. But then Deonna was told she was not TV ready, which she admitted to me made her go off because she wasn't given advice on how to be TV ready. Now, I'm working in reverse here. I started with her release, then failed creative plans, and now we're going to talk about how she got signed. But she was booked for All In, if you all remember, a couple years ago. In 2018, around April 2018, she was booked for that show. But around that same period, she was approached by Canyon Seaman, who helped with a lot of the talent relations in NXT. And he said, oh, I thought that we had a short-term contract and all that. And she's like, no, we don't. You don't get to make that decision. And I'm under contract to Ring of Honor. But she positioned herself to leave ROH after that and wanted to work All In under that umbrella. But WWE told her she wouldn't be used for TV during those 6 weeks. And he wasn't sure that that opportunity would be there in a year. As it turns out, not only would it have been there in a year, she probably would have gotten paid more in 2019. And in 2020 hindsight, she said that she wishes that she would have done All In. I'm telling you guys, check out that interview. Deonna is awesome to talk to. Well, we have no contract updates. That's rare. No updates, no firings, no releases, nothing like that. But we do have some injury updates, sort of. Rey Mysterio back in action. He's going to be at Money in the Bank doing his thing. Had a lot of people asking about Bo Dallas. For some reason, people said, oh, where's B-Team? Where's B-Team? Well, Bo Dallas hasn't wrestled since November 13th. He's been out of action, so no B-Team for the last 5 months or so. Also, a bit under the radar, but Titus O'Neil has not wrestled since mid-December, so he's been out of action as well. And really, at this point, all due respect to Titus O'Neil, I think that he is best served outside the ring. Occasional appearances, but man, he is so valuable to them outside of the ring. He's just so good at what they have him do. Peyton Royce, Billy Kay, both out of action since November 2019 as well. So not a lot on the stats and the injury side of things, but we do have some stats for the wrestling week. Reminder, those go up every week. MVP, winless in all four of his 2020 WWE matches. Drew McIntyre was a part of 8 out of MVP's last 10 WWE matches in 2010 before he left the company. MVP, that is. Drew would also go on to beat MVP in 2020. Brendan Vink is now 0-4 on the WWE TV shows over the last month and 0-3 on Raw. Shane Thorne is also 0-4 in that period. Apollo Crews gained his first TV win since July 2019. Andrade's last U.S. title defense was 7 weeks ago, way back on March 8th. So if he does not defend that title on Raw Monday, there will be no defenses at all in April, and it'll be 2 months by the time he even has a chance to defend it. El Hijo del Fantasma returned to American cable TV after not having a cable televised match in 2019. He's appeared for Impact and Lucha Underground in the past. Bianca Belair is now undefeated in her 3 matches on Raw. Kenny Omega has won his last 7 singles televised matches. He's not lost a sanctioned AEW singles match since Dynamite went on the air. His only losses in singles matches have been lights out, unsanctioned matches. Drake Maverick wrestled his first televised match since Crown Jewel and his first match on cable TV since July 2019 on Raw. 82% of Money in the Bank winners have successfully cashed in their briefcases, and we are steady on the road to Money in the Bank. Big thank you guys for subscribing. At the end of the month, we always have credit card expirations when people are like, hey, I haven't been getting my Fightful Select. Make sure that stuff's updated if you all don't want to miss out on that. But ECW month in May, we got lots of cool ECW interviews coming your way. Just lots of cool stuff in general, as always. Until next time, guys, thank you all so much. We're out.